will educate, that will empower. Keep them in your closet. Take them out one by one or give it to a library. Call in right now. Get pledge $500. Get five copies of Heist and give them out. But call in right now. And speaking of films, again, get out to the Quad only until October 4th. It's Juan Gonzalez's film, Harvest of Empire, the untold story of Latinos in America. Is it available? Is it going to be showing there? So please call in. We cannot do this without you, only with you. Your call makes the difference. You make WBAI happen. Please call in. Fill these phone lines. We urge you to go to the phone. We cannot do it without you, only with you. Your call makes the difference. Call in right now, 212-209-2950. Let us know that you're there. Let us know you're standing up for independent media. We only have 30 seconds to go. Make the call now, 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Make the call that makes the difference. $100 for a Heist Who Stole the American Dream, $75 for a signed copy of my book. It's called The Silenced Majority. Please call in right now. $2,000 for dinner and a show, or $25 or $50. Just become a member of WBAI. We need your support. We ask you to be there. 212-209-2950. Thank you to Julie Crosby and Dennis Moynihan and Miguel Noguera and Steve Martinez and Mike Burke and Renee Feltz and Dina Guzder and Amy Littlefield and Sam Alcock. Keep those phone calls coming in. We cannot do this without you, only with you. 212-209-2950. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
We should have the right to choose. We should be mad. Are you mad?
This Thursday, March 3rd, between 8 and 10 p.m., join the Joy of Resistance as we celebrate the long-awaited release of the DVD of what's been called the best historical film on the modern women's movement. She's Beautiful When She's Angry. We'll be playing clips of the film, offering listeners the DVD as well as tickets to the DVD release party, which will take place on International Women's Day and will include a panel discussion and cocktail party. And we'll also offer listeners a book, Who is Hillary Clinton? Essays from the Left on the Woman Who May Well Be Our Next President. Writers include Erica Jong, Barbara Ehrenreich, and Doug Henwood, with an introduction by Katha Pollitt of The Nation. So tune in on Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m., kick off Women's History Month with authentic, exhilarating women's history.
International Working Women's Day at WBAI will broadcast on Tuesday, March 8th from 6 a.m. till midnight. Please tune in to hear our poignant stories about work, family, play, healing, politics, love, and so much more. If you want to get involved in the day, if you have something to share, send your proposal to iwwd@wbai.org. And please tune in to WBAI Radio, 99.5 FM and wbai.org on Tuesday, March 8th from 6 a.m. till midnight for WBAI Radio's International Working Women's Day Celebration.
The Black Lives Matter movement is not only a political phenomenon, but a cultural one. In the February issue of The Independent, a group of six black writers wrote first-person pieces about why they love being black. Three of those writers, Nicholas Powers, Jamar Wakefield, and Brittany Williams, will join Lady Dragonfly in a conversation about their own experiences of learning to love their culture and themselves despite the deep-seated societal hostility to blackness grounded in 400 years of white supremacy. This event will happen on Thursday, March 17th at 7 p.m. at the Commons Cafe, 388 Atlantic Avenue between Hoyt and Bond Streets, in the Borough Hill section of Brooklyn. For more information, go to independentwithay.org. That's independent.org.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is just about 7 o'clock. It's time, once again, for a special expanded edition of Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving.
Now I can make a call. We couldn't get much worse. But if they could, they would. For they live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. But they live on.
The program is off the hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Mike.
Hi there.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
And Kyle.
Hello.
Bernie S. Do we have Bernie S.? No? Oh, wait, hold on. We have to bring him up. Okay, do we have Bernie S. now?
Greetings from Philadelphia.
There he is. Okay, sorry, we had the wrong channel up.
Okay, can you hear me from Philadelphia?
Well, we can hear you over the phone. I don't know where you are, but yeah, Philadelphia sounds good.
Okay, good.
We're here for about 2 hours tonight.
Wow.
Doing a special expanded edition. Guess what? The fundraiser is still going on. Yes, we still have one more week, I believe.
Yeah. I mean, it's good because we get to talk to people that we don't always talk to. More on that in a bit.
Yes, we do get to talk to. We have a special guest who's going to be joining us in just about a minute, I guess. But first, any updates from people? We haven't been on in 2 weeks, I believe.
There's a lot going on, but let's get to our guest, maybe.
Okay, let's get to our guest. Well, our guest has to do with the actual fundraiser because it's part of something that we're offering tonight. But there's a cocktail party outside too. So if we could just maybe close the door, that'd be nice. We have, as we said, another 2 hour fundraising edition of the program as part of the winter fundraiser. We'd like to offer things to our listeners that are of interest to the hacker community, to people interested in technology. And tonight we stumbled into something that I think is going to be truly amazing and interesting. There's this new book's not yet out. It's about to come out, called The Car Hacker's Handbook. It's a guide for the penetration hacker or penetration tester, I guess, and all about cars. We've talked about this many, many times. We've talked about cars are basically computers these days and privy to all sorts of security issues and technological wizardry as well, but all kinds of risks, all kinds of things that we haven't really thought through, and hacking cars has become something of an interesting topic. I know, Kyle, you've been involved in things like this for years, and just basically the right of access to car technology, something that any kind of technology, the powers that be try to control it and keep hackers like us from actually accessing the hardware and the software, and cars are turning into that, where you can't just take your car to a mechanic anymore. You have to take it to somebody who's licensed to look at it and to read the software and do all sorts of other things. And it's increasingly software as well. It's increasingly a code that is a problem, not just mechanics.
Yeah. And those dealerships or manufacturers limit the access to the tools which can interface with the computer systems. And that in and of itself makes it pretty difficult for the average mechanic who themselves would be setting up to do all kinds of different repairs, preparing what kinds of tools they're going to use and how they're going to maybe repair or operate on a specific system on a vehicle. When they don't have access to the software, they can't really prepare themselves to work on the vehicle. And with a book like this, you get sort of, I think, a sense of how to set up your work to get around some of that stuff because we don't have access to the right kinds of tools. So this is becoming something that's important. And in fact, we reported on some changes in the interpretation of the DMCA rule about working on vehicles and also agricultural equipment. But the computer systems that run these things have, as you said, been off limits mm-hmm. and very difficult from a legal standpoint. And this interpretation is allowing a year for manufacturers and dealers and so on to prepare for this. But after a year, the interpretation of the DMCA will allow for a lot more tinkering and building onto these platforms. So hopefully it's going to be this is sort of just the emergence of it. And this book is not out yet. It's really kind of an emerging and exciting field.
Well, let's bring out our guest. The Car Hacker's Handbook was written by Craig Smith. Craig Smith is on an airplane right now. Hopefully he's not trying to hack that. A chief guy behind No Storage Press, which publishes this book and has been on our radio program before, Bill Pollack. Welcome to Off the Hook.
Thanks. And I'm wondering why Craig isn't in a car.
Yeah, you know, you'd think. Maybe he knows too much about cars and it's avoiding
them. Planes are safer. Uh-huh. Planes are safer.
Tell me, what drew you to this subject matter?
So first Craig's the expert here, but I was his editor on it. I mean, that means at No Storage, is I worked through every single line of the book. And as Craig can tell you, he probably wanted to, hopefully not, but may have wanted to strangle me at one point or two.
Well, but, any good editor gets that. Yes, I know.
Yeah, it's happened many times. I haven't been strangled yet, but I've heard that on multiple titles.
I have the scars.
But it's amazing. You probably understand. But anyway, the result is excellent. So I actually was at, some con. I can't remember. It was probably 2 o'clock in the morning, and I was talking to a friend of mine saying I really wanted to do a book about car hacking because I like Kyle was talking about, OBD2 stuff. So first off, you can get pretty cheap OBD2 readers, and Android, the Android market or Google Play has, I think it's called Torque Pro. I was just looking at it while you were talking. You can actually use that to connect with your OBD2 reader and get a bunch of data and actually look at torque curves and stuff.
Hang on, Bill, OBD2, what is that?
I don't remember what it stands for, but basically it's like OBD1, I guess, came first, and it's basically the connector, like, in my Acura. Mine's a 99 Acura, so anyway, it's like in the back of the ashtray. There are these connectors that I think they're usually internal to the car. You plug in there, and you can read the codes from the engine control unit and other computer systems in the car. There might be a dozen systems in the car, so that's what the mechanics are reading. And it used to be like, you'd buy an OBD2 scanner, you'll get the codes, and then you have to basically interpret the codes using a book or something like that. But now, some manual, right? Or just go online and find the codes and then try to zero in on what systems have issues. But now with like Torque Pro, if you just look at the Google Play market for OBD2 or just OBD, you'll pull up different tools that will connect to these cheap scanners, and they're like maybe $20.
Wow.
And then you can
Bill, I'm sorry to interrupt. This is Bernie down in Philly.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
OBD2 stands for Onboard Diagnostics.
Thank you. That's right. Yes.
And it's been around. My old Volvo had OBD1, and my newer Volvo has OBD2. And wow, just for like $20, you can actually see the data stream, not just the data stream, but you can see all the codes that your car is recording.
You can actually pull it live. Yeah, I don't remember exactly what I paid. Yeah, but you can, if you look around, I bought this thing. I gave it to a friend of mine because I wasn't going to use it. And by the way, my 66 Volvo does not have OBD anything. that's probably the safest vehicle, and everyone doesn't have anything. And it also doesn't have doors that lock, which is another separate issue.
Well, can I just read the first paragraph of the description of the Car Hacker's Handbook, because I think this is what will make it interesting to most of the people listening now. Modern cars are more computerized than ever. Infotainment and navigation systems, Wi-Fi, automatic software updates, other innovations aim to make driving more convenient. But vehicle technologies haven't kept pace with today's more hostile security environment, leaving millions vulnerable to attack. Now, Bill, is that just fear-mongering here, yeah. or what are we talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, so you asked me a question, which I didn't respond to, like a good politician. So the thing that was the most eye-opening thing to me, this was kind of like editing the, we did this book on VoIP hacking, and it's basically like the fundamental problem with VoIP is everything is sent in the clear, so every attack is kind of the same, and it hasn't really changed. Vehicles, my assessment of vehicles, having gone through every line of this book, is that basically cars are like networks from the 1990s on four wheels that weigh 5,000 pounds and, you know, travel 80 miles an hour. These networks are completely exposed. There's a section in here, for example, which talks about, and this is just a piece of it, right? It's like cryptographic algorithms that are broken that are still sold by automotive manufacturers, because basically you've got a bunch of engineers and someone designed it into some chip and they've got all the dies done and they just keep making this thing and they're known to be broken. But that's just one piece of it. So now we've got, for example, vehicles where you've got tire pressure sensor monitors that connect wirelessly with the engine control unit, and that's a way into a car. We are developing, and this isn't like theory. This is all real. Like, it's like attacking any kind of wireless network. Vehicle-to-vehicle communication systems are being developed. So basically the idea is, it's pretty interesting, it's also kind of terrifying, that cars are sending out, they're capturing beacons from roadside obstacles or whatever, and they're communicating with that, which is sending information to the driver. But anything that's going into the car is a way in. This is like one of the things with Bluetooth. And Bluetooth didn't go right into the heart of the CPU. It doesn't have this, unless you turn on protection. I don't know enough about Bluetooth security, but basically, like, if you don't lock the door or build blocks there, it just goes right through. And cars are old engineering. So Bernie's Volvo, like, engineers were not thinking about this stuff as far as what I gather. It just was not a consideration. So and you can see it in the way engineers think. There's a great talk at this past Chaos Communication Congress called Dieselgate, where they talk about the whole VW thing and, how VW basically beat emissions controls. This is the way that automotive engineers think. They're not tasked with securing a system, they're tasked with you must achieve this thing. We want, remote door locks. We want remote engine start. No one's talking to them, and I've heard this from people who work for some high-profile car manufacturers. They don't want to put the money, most of them, into security. They don't want to hear it. It doesn't fit into the equation. So what you get are these kinds of systems that are built one on top of another, often proprietary systems, but you can find white papers about them. You can also find tools online. I'll have to find the name of the tool. There's one suite of tools that Craig talks about, which is like a free set of tools. I think it may be through Open Garages, which is basically the group to do car hacking. And it's pretty amazing. So basically you can set up like an ECU test bench. You pull an engine control unit out of a junkyard. Let's say you wanted to figure out how to attack Bernie's car. So you go and find the same Volvo model. Volvo is very good about making the same model over and over for years. And you go and find an ECU unit and you set it up in the test bench. And then you connect up to it and you can read things like RPM, and then you can figure out what's controlling the RPM sensor. So if that RPM sensor is controlled by some particular packet, like some packet going through the network, you can then work with that packet. I'm no expert on this topic, but basically, like, if you can figure out what's controlling it, you can control that packet to say, for example, open the doors, and you can replay packets. So the classic replay attack is you capture the things, and this is like cracking software, right? Like early people cracking software, they weren't necessarily reverse engineering things. They would just cut out the piece of code generation and then push it out there. Here's my key gen. And basically it's the code. I don't know how it works. Just run this thing and it'll make codes for you. So a replay attack is like, I'm not going to make the thing. I'm just going to capture the signal and send it back. So if it's a wireless attack, it's a replay attack. you capture the signal and you send it back, which is why, and there are some expensive tools to do this, and there are some cheap ones. But you can capture signals, you can target things to make the doors open or start the engine. It can't happen. We know there are high profile attacks that have happened, like Charlie Miller and Chris Valasek's attacks, among others. And the thing is that when these attacks happen, they can take down hundreds of thousands of vehicles around the world.
At the same time?
It depends on what the attack is. If it's something, let's say, for example, you've got a vehicle that connects to OnStar, and let's say that OnStar is communicating with that whole suite of vehicles, or let's say it's Ford. I mean, this is just me talking, right? But let's say you've got Ford Sync, and now the next wave is, you know, Tesla starts this. Of course, you dial, the car connects to a central server, which updates your firmware, connects with the car. Let's say you attack that server somehow, you man in the middle of it, and then you understand how that server works. I think Tesla actually has got very, very strong security built in. They also have an amazing CSO and some great people on the team. So I think they're very, very, very impressive. But for some of the more traditional car manufacturers, they go and they buy the system. They don't check the strength of the security system. But now this satellite is communicating with all of their cars. So someone goes in and man in the middle is the satellite, right? I mean, anything is possible given enough money. And then whatever it is that's man in the middling it, as in like, I am the satellite you want to talk to, not that satellite, then pushes a signal out to all of those vehicles and shuts them down. And they're going 80 miles an hour and the engines turn off. Because they determine that, oh, in order to do this, this is the control code we need to send. So we craft this thing and we send it to all the vehicles that are connected to that satellite. And maybe it's not all around the world because the satellite's only in a certain position, but whatever's in range of the satellite, you can shut down the vehicle.
So, Bill,
it's totally practical.
So, Bill, this book sounds like it's great not only for people who have cars and want to know more about them and get into them, but also people like me who hate cars and want to destroy them.
I like cars. I really like old cars. I also like new cars. I like all kinds of cars. But this is not a book. There's a section on performance tuning. So the first people wonders like, oh, I can get more power out of my car. I say to those people, go to someone who does a chip monitor for $400. Like I have a Volvo 850 96, and you can modify you can chip it for like $450. You'll take it from 200 horsepower to I think 275. Just
wow.
Do that because someone's already figured it. Yeah, that's actually one of the best deals around. The Turbo 850s were pretty amazing because they basically were underclocked essentially for American roads. But I think it's really interesting if you work on cars and you understand that there are computers there and you want to understand what's going on inside. It's really going to take you deep inside what's going on inside that automobile network. And the key thing I would say, and again, I'm not Craig, but like my read on it is the CAN bus, which someone can look at. I don't remember the. But anyway, it's the core network that runs in the car, and lots of things connect to the CAN bus. There's a lot of information traveling down some central paths without security, and it's collected from different sources. So it might go to the infotainment unit, which is getting increasingly complex. It goes to the engine control unit, which is controlling throttle control. Or braking, or you know, sending information, processing stuff in the car. And those units have gotten much more complex. It's taking readings from the tire pressure monitoring sensor. It might, these cars have started to connect to the internet. There's all this stuff coming in, and it's like imagine that's your house, and you don't have a firewall. That's what I see in a vehicle.
Yeah, it's
you've got to have you, and everything is controlled, and you've got a house that's everything is controlled wirelessly.
It's really striking, though. For those of us who have been paying attention to technology for the past couple of decades, we've seen so many things that were just appliances, simple appliances, become so much more complex. Our telephones are now computers. Our televisions are computers. Our refrigerators are computers. Mm-hmm. And our cars, which have long been this thing that just gas goes in one end, smoke comes out the other end, and it takes you places, it's basically a very complex computer itself. So this book sounds like a real eye-opener for not only people who are already technical experts and want to learn how to tweak things, but for people who really haven't thought much before about what goes on behind the scenes and under the hood when they turn the key and start it up.
I guess we should mention how people can get this book. I know that we haven't been doing that. It's The Car Hacker's Handbook, a guide for the penetration tester. Fascinating stuff. We can talk for hours about this, and we just might. You can call, what's the number, 212-209-2950? Is that still the number?
Yeah, it's still
the number. I haven't been here in a while. Okay, 212-209-2950, pledge of $55 will get you a copy of this book. We only have a limited number, so if you're interested in this kind of thing, and I think you should be, I think what Bill is talking about is something that affects all of us. And even if you're not technically inclined, even if you're not a hacker, it's good to know what it is your car is capable of doing or what it is that your car is vulnerable to. You might not think about these things. You might not realize that, hey, somebody can change these settings, or I can change these settings, or the manufacturer is not telling me the truth, or this is what my vehicle is capable of. All of that and more is what you will learn. And if you're somebody who does like to fiddle around with the hardware that you own, then this book will really be invaluable in showing you some of the things that you can do. 212-209-2950 is the phone number.
Yeah, this is definitely a great way to catch up with the state of the art. Something Bill pointed out that is true is that you have these generations of vehicles slowly becoming a little bit more complex, having a bit more in the way of sensors and computers. And what that is tracking very parallels a lot of what we've seen with other forms of technology, where you've got more and more data accruing and that is being captured or recorded on up to some of these systems being connected wirelessly and so on, as Bill was indicating. And so this will thrust you right into the driver's seat, so to speak, of the huge amount of information and, as he said, free tools and different techniques. And I really want to go through actually and see this. I've only seen a review and a description and what Bill has said, but I would love to see this because I think it does a great job of organizing the different topics and will help you organize your work if you're pursuing some of these systems. Maybe you own a vehicle yourself and so on. So this is a great way to get caught up on some of the latest and most interesting systems in most of actually the 256 million cars on the road today. That's a lot of cars. So spreading this information around is...
Yeah. And it is indeed the latest. This book, if I'm not mistaken, comes out this month, actually, doesn't it?
Well, I'm holding a copy in my hand. This is an early copy, but yeah, it's the book business is a slow, like a giant, you know, freighter. Everything takes a long time to move, but yes, sort of.
Well, it's worth the wait many times, and I think this is one of the examples of it. Tell us something about No Starch. You've been around for ages and publishing all kinds of interesting material.
I have to retire. You're right. I should retire, but I probably will not until I die. So we've been around since '94. One book that I think Bernie always has found intriguing is the Hacking the Cable Modem, which is kind of like, this is sort of like the next wave. What I try to do is to basically make books that make people smarter. So one story I like to tell is when I was at a Hope, probably in like 2000, I remember, and we brought out Hacking the Art of Exploitation by John Erickson, and no one was buying our book because they were all buying like books that would be like, go to this website and run this attack and whatever. And I stood there and I was really annoyed because I have no filter. And I just basically said to people, like, if you want to learn something, read this. If not, go over there and buy that. And I said that for a day. By the end of the conference, it was all sold out because people opened it up. They saw code and they put it down. Because a lot of people in the hacking community aren't necessarily comfortable with code. And you don't have to be a programmer to do something useful with code, just be able to read it and find patterns and stuff, which is what a lot of people do, especially a lot of reversers. So what I've tried to do over the years, especially in the hacking community, is not only build books, or I like to think about, you know, handcrafting them in many ways, like find books that are interesting, that make people smarter, that cover topics that some people won't touch, but that I think are important to cover, important to address, because something like this, for example, when I was at ShmooCon Hacker Conference in D.C., a guy came up to me, he had a booth there, and he goes, I want to buy that book. It wasn't released. I said, well, it's not released. I said, well, I work with the White House, and there are 10,000 people in D.C. that need this right now, because this is what everyone's talking about. So I really, and I sold it, I sold them an early sample. I didn't give it to them. I should have probably sold it at the price of like military hardware for $3,000, but I sold it for $20. But it was, it's fine. It's fair. But anyway, but I think one thing is, like, this is a huge attack service. And for people who are looking to get into hacking and looking for opportunities, there's going to be a lot of interest in this topic, because it's terrifying to many people. Because people, everyone goes out and buys these fancy cars where everything's plugged in. It's terrifying to governments. You know, it's a really unprotected, giant attack surface, and it needs to be addressed. So this is the kind of thing that I think is the kind of thing that we need to do more of. There aren't that many opportunities to do this. And the other thing is that I won't bring out a book unless I think we can do something great. And I really think this is great. But it's a wake up call for many people throughout government. It's a wake up call for the auto industry. One thing I've also seen is, like, when we do something, it gets noticed and people can't do it. They have to pay attention. It's like, it's suddenly very real. And we've got an awful lot of coverage in news media, and you can't just ignore it anymore. It's something real. And there's something about books coming from a publisher that just make it, like, someone walks into an office, it's like, you know, we've been talking about this, and look at this. And imagine someone, like, thumps the book down on the table. It's like, pay attention. You can't ignore it anymore. And I think that's kind of the magic of books. We also not only publish in this area, we're doing a bunch of program books for kids. And I think we basically lead that whole market. And I think that's really important, because you've got these kids who are 10 years old, and we publish, for example, Python for Kids. We did Learn to Program in Minecraft. We've got the best-selling books on Scratch by far. We're working with the MIT Lifelong Kindergarten to do the Scratch Junior book, which is a program book for 5 to 8-year-olds. We're trying to do stuff like figure out how to do interesting math books for kids. Because I look at kids, I watched my son growing up, and I remember, like, he had, you know, friends when he was like 10 or 11, and they were kind of interested in science and math, but they just didn't really do anything with it, and they kind of fell off. He's continued on with, like, a tremendous interest in math and science. But I think for any kid that wants to do that, I want to be there to have resources for them. Because one thing I can't stand is, like, when I see a kid and they're frustrated, or I certainly felt like this when I was younger. They can't get the kind of information that they want. Books don't speak to them. I want to make something for them, because I understand that level of frustration. And I've met several kids, like 10-year-old kids, who've learned Python from Python for Kids. They came up to me, and it's like, many girls, actually, 10, 11, 12-year-old girls, who have learned to code. And we didn't make the book for boys or girls. We just tried to make a clear book, for example, that would help people to understand basics of programming. And with everything that we do, we try to make it accessible. So anyone should be able to pick this up and understand it as much as possible. You know, if they're not an electrical engineer, I can't make them into one. Well, I can, but then not with this book.
Well, I'm thinking of a scenario where a kid gets this book and starts hacking the family car. Is that
very unlikely. These are not simple attacks.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, and it's not a book that's full of attacks. That's the thing. It's like, there's one thing in the book that basically you can, you know, where cars have like push button codes on them. There's a whole, just a sequence of numbers that you can press in. Apparently you press in the sequence of numbers, and within 20 minutes you can open any car door.
Wow.
I've done that once.
You did that.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah, but it was probably just default. You know, I was messing around. But yeah, some cars have those keypads on the side.
Right.
I know on the smart car that we have from Canada, which, by the way, Bill, that's a real nightmare trying to get that fixed without the right codes. But there was a special sequence of things you had to do with the key fob and buttons on the dashboard. And when you did it correctly, your running lights would turn off, and that you could bypass that since in Canada running lights were required. But there are all kinds of little hidden things like that in modern cars, which I think would be kind of cool.
I don't know that this will reveal those. That's not really... This is very focused, I would say, on low-level stuff, understanding the system, but serious attacks. Like, mm-hmm. Those are those kind of Easter egg things. It's like your dishwasher has a problem. You wave the magic wand, and codes come up, and it's in service mode, and you push some buttons, and the thing's fixed. It's not that so much. It's more like, this is how the thing is built. This is how the communication. So this is This is great for people looking for network attacks, people looking for new exploits. There's a lot of people that are always looking for exploits. And my strong belief is that I want to teach people how systems work because they can find new exploits and they can make better systems. I don't want to give people collections of attacks. That just makes people more annoying. And people, you can get that on the internet. But I want people to walk away with all the books we publish with a real understanding of the system. Because when you understand the system, you're ahead of everyone else. You're ahead of all the people that are waiting for someone. It's like people who are, you know, waiting for Microsoft to hand them the answer to using some Microsoft tool versus people who are building their own tools or working with Linux. I'm a Linux fan. You know, I can actually do the stuff themselves or in 2 minutes solve their own problems. This is really about understanding this as a system. Just as you would understand like TCP/IP, and when you understand how networks work, you find attacks. And early attacks, like in the 90s, it was easy for people to find attacks because nothing was protected. I mean, it was like the internet was new, and it was like a candy store. Now things have gotten much more complicated, but vehicles, at least based on my read of vehicle infrastructure, hasn't changed. It's the same system. So, you know, Bernie's OBD1, whatever, I mean, these all had computers, and they had no security, and they've been in vehicles for years, and now by making things more accessible, you know, you don't have to pop open the hood to get into the car. You can connect through the tire pressure monitoring system.
And that's the thing, too, with a book like this, is it's not just about cracking open a book and finding some exploits so you can do some devilish things, but it's about cracking open the book and finding exploits and the ways they happen described to you to open your eyes to what can go on, what right. can happen, how to protect yourself against such things, or even just to realize that, yes, this sort of thing is going on behind the scenes of this popular device that everyone owns.
Yeah, and let's not discount that. That's really important, the empowerment of understanding the system such that you can repair it. I don't want to lose that in the conversation at all, because that's a really important thing. That's so many devices, consumer electronics. I mean, I'm sure all you guys would back me up that they're not necessarily much more disposable. There's not a lot of ability to physically repair things, especially when they're software or they're then obscured or made hard to work with, either because you don't have the tools necessarily. But this is really critical stuff for people that, you know, maybe hobby with their car or just maybe have a problem or an annoyance like the lights you were talking about, Emmanuel. It just gives them that much more of an edge, as Bill was saying, than your kind of average consumer who might end up waiting and waiting and waiting at the dealer, you know, to get in for an appointment and all of that sort of rigmarole, and so on. So yeah, I just
absolutely.
Want to add that.
Yeah. And it's always, as I understand it, I'm not a car person myself, but I've known many car people and people who are heavily into car culture. And for decades, you've always seen people in their garages, you know, always tweaking this and twisting that and trying to get some more out of this or at least fix something themselves. And that's something that you need to now know, things like you'll find in this book, because it involves computers, it involves electronics, it involves components like this. It's not all just pipes and wires anymore.
212-209-2950. Get your copy of the Car Hacker's Handbook for a pledge to WBAI of $55. You'll learn so much about what's going on in your automobile, in other people's automobiles, the potential. You'll probably come up with all kinds of ideas for things that you hadn't thought possible before.
Hey, Bill, do you think this book and books like it will sort of serve as a wake-up call to the automotive industry to fix their stuff?
Yes. I absolutely do. I mean, I saw the look on the guy's face from MITRE. He's like, you know, we need this. And I got the same thing at DEF CON, too. I mean, we had just early samples. Book publishers, it's not the same. Book publishing is not the same business that it was 20 years ago, but a book can still have significant impact because it makes things very real. And I think it's not just like, oh, there's something published online. Lots of people in, you know, high positions in government are still very, books are very influential. People are still learning through textbooks. When you give someone a physical thing, it makes a difference. And if someone can walk in with this physical thing and say, hey, this is what we were afraid of, thunk, here's this thing, I think this will make an absolute, I think it makes a significant difference because it's very real. It's very, you know, you hand someone a printout for something online, it's not real to them. You hand them a magazine or you hand them a book, and it's like, it's a real thing now.
Yeah, I hear that. Like, believe me, websites can be taken down. Things that are online disappear. I've, you know, try looking for something that you know, was around even 10 years ago. It's really, really hard to find sometimes. Most times, I would say. A book like this, it's permanent. You know, somebody will find this in their garage 20 years from now and still be captivated by it. That's the nature of publishing, the good nature of publishing. There's a lot of crap out there, too, absolutely. But I don't think the stuff that you put out qualifies in any sense as that. It's always been fascinating material and stuff that hackers really take an interest in. And I don't think this will be any exception. In fact, I think this is the first of many such books that will be coming out on this particular subject. I imagine you'll probably have a series of these things.
Especially this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, only if Craig wants to write another one. We'll have to see. Uh-huh. I mean, the thing for me is, like, I want the best people doing stuff so I can make it great. And the way we work with everything, so we have two levels of editorial. So we have about five editors who are essentially developmental editors, and I do that level of work. So I'm probably working on 10 projects right now, and we read every line, like, in-house. It's not done overseas with, like, people who actually know what they're talking about, and work with the authors to craft that thing. Once that's done, it goes to copy edit. So that first step is significant because I don't know any. We only publish 30 books a year, but we have a very high profile as a company because they're almost all successful. And the only way to do that is to actually work on them. You can't just throw them out there. I'm not in the business of content generation. Like, there are companies that are starting up now that are like, we make books based on data science. And I that just seems like an oxymoron to me. I make books that our readers want. Like, I go to shows so I can understand what's important to people and try to mirror that in the kind of things that we produce. One thing that our readers want is relevant information. Don't fill with fluff. Find people who know what they're talking about. Make sure I can read it. So we do that. And that's why we're like, I mean, sure, maybe I could do 10 books, but I won't. If I can find 10 amazing authors writing on something interesting, and we do know a bunch of some serious car hackers now, I would do other books on the topic. But I don't really know what I would do. I'm really happy with where this book ended up, and I don't actually know what I would do as an extension of this unless Craig wanted to do something. Craig's an amazing author. He's really phenomenal.
Can you tell us a little bit about Craig? Like, what makes him the guy to write this book?
He's an extremely well-respected trainer, like really well-respected in the industry, extremely well-connected. He knows everyone, and there's, as you might imagine, you know, some people fly under the radar in this community. His group, Open Garages, has been really central to disseminating information about car hacking and working on tools and stuff. He is, in my experience with him, which is mostly through email. I saw him yesterday, but he knows, like, everything about this, and it's actually really fascinating to watch the interplay between Craig and his technical reviewer, Eric, because Eric would be like, oh, there's this thing. Like, a lot of this is just simply not known, or someone picked this up from this auto manufacturer. And Craig would invariably say, you know, you're right, it's that, but I was just over this company talking to them about this thing, and, you know, this is actually the way it works, and here's this white paper. So they're digging through a lot of primary sources and try to explain it. And some things, normally we like everything explained in our books. Whenever there's a new term introduced, we like it to be explained. In some cases, we just don't know enough about the technology. Like, Craig knows it exists, but he's not necessarily sure, you know, where it came from or what it's going to turn into. It's maybe a proposed standard, and maybe it's been sitting on the books for years, but we're not sure where it's going to go. So that was a little bit frustrating to me, only because I couldn't answer all the questions. I couldn't find answers to all the questions that I had. But I'm sure there are some other people out there who know as much as Craig does, but I can't imagine that there's more than a handful.
Well, the thing is, Bill, you're going to hear from those people, and any questions that you have, any new technologies that are emerging, you're going to get follow-ups. You're going to get all kinds of other things. That's why I say I think this will be the first in a series. I think there are all kinds of people throughout the world that have something to contribute to this particular subject matter, and you guys will be at the forefront of all that.
I'd absolutely do that, and the thing is that, you know, we'll always do it right. That's the way my business is built. If I don't like the way a book is progressing, I just pull it out of production. I spent last spring rewriting three books that I thought weren't ready, and my chief editor did the same. And we ended up with we published Automate the Boring Stuff with Python, which is selling, like, it's selling better than the Python book that anyone has seen in years. It's an amazing book. We published Python Playground, which is, like, really interesting Python. I'm not a programmer, but I've edited many very successful programming titles, but I don't write any code because I have nothing I want to write. I like reading code. I think it's interesting. I like solving problems. So this is some very complex stuff with, like, you do a firework simulation, you create an auto stereograms, all done in Python. Really interesting, lots of math, and I'm not afraid of that. And I believe that within the hacking community, and hackers of all kinds, people like to think, and I want people to think. I don't want to publish boring stuff because I have to edit it.
Yeah,
I don't do books on enterprise.
And this particular book, the Car Hacker's Handbook, was something that, I mean, you're not an auto mechanic, I assume.
I have tools.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. But this is something.
I don't really know how to use them.
It piqued your interest, though. I mean, I think you're the first. Guinea pig as far as when something like this is put forth. You found it interesting as somebody in the hacker community, and I think that means that a lot of other people will also find it interesting.
Yeah, no, I like it. I mean, I've taken apart engines, like tops of engines and stuff. I like to get into cars, but my thing is always, like, I know kind of what's going on in there, but I don't know enough. I know enough to be dangerous and wreck my vehicle. And one caveat about this is you can totally destroy your engine with this book.
Oh, really? Okay, I mean, well, that's handy. Tell how that would go about.
Well, like if you do things wrong, I mean, that engine control unit is just a computer. So if you go and you push the RPM into some crazy zone, I mean, you could just, like you'll read one section. It's pretty funny. It's like, make sure when you do this that the car is someplace where it can't move. It's on blocks. And I mean, these attacks can be dangerous to your vehicle and to your person, because if you, like, let's say you do something. So part of vehicle attacks is based on using things like Wireshark. You capture packets from the network running on the vehicle, just like you would on any network, and then you see what the packets do. So once you identify those packets, you can do things with the packets. But once you figure out what's controlling the RPM, you can then control the RPM. But if it's you're sitting in a computer, you're kind of divorced from the thing, and then next thing you know, it's like, what does this button do? And you push this thing, and now, whoop, you just blew the engine. I'm sure that's totally possible. I don't think it's not going to happen in 5 minutes, but that ECU has tremendous control over your vehicle. And you've also got, electric steering. Probably, don't we have, like, electric braking now or something? I don't know. Like, all this stuff is electric. So it's controlled by an engine control unit. So you can, you know, you can destroy the thing. So what you do is, I think if someone actually wanted to do this, I would go to the junkyard, get an engine control unit from the car that you want to work on, and you set up a test bench, and you plug into it, and you get different readings, and you'll see on the ECU, like, you make the RPMs go crazy, for example. And the thing to realize is that if it's connected to your car, the RPMs will probably go crazy if it's connected to your engine. I mean, because that's also got output. You've got input that's controlling that sensor, but it's got some kind of output. It's actually going to do things to your car. So, but it's not like, this is not a book that anyone's going to just pick up and, like, you know, that afternoon just be doing crazy things to their vehicle.
Well, you say you can do things. You're talking about the person that actually has physical access to the car. I'm picturing all kinds of tabloid reporters listening to this program now, freaking out, thinking that anybody, you know, from Malaysia can access the internet and hack your car. It's not like that, is it?
I don't know the answer to that, because I don't know. I mean, again, I think, like, I would say, based on what I'm reading and what my understanding is of what automotive manufacturers are doing, I would definitely be concerned about some of these things when these vehicles are connected to the internet, because from what I understand from speaking with Craig and reading the book, there isn't any security in the vehicles. They weren't designed for security. They were designed to meet engineering tasks, just as, like, you know, VW designed their vehicles to meet emission standards that were known, and then when you go outside those standards, no one paid attention to that. So they're selling hardware today with broken cryptographic algorithms that are used to, you know, do a remote start or open doors. And the thing is that they're known to be broken, and they still sell these by, I imagine, the hundreds of thousands. They still sell this stuff. So, yeah, I'll still drive home. Well, first of all, my Acura doesn't have any internet connectivity, and the radio is just all mechanical. So I'm not concerned, but I'm definitely concerned when I think about things like, you know, I mean, all these manufacturers are putting, like, well, you've got, like, what, like Apple, whatever, like, in these cars. I don't have a car like that. I don't have any of that stuff in my car. But all these electronics that have internet connectivity would definitely make me concerned. Now, Some of the more classic attacks would involve, for example, firmware updates. So when you do map uploads and stuff, you can use that as a route in to the ECU, but you have to have physical access to the car. But some people could get it. My bigger concern is when you've got tire pressure monitoring, it's TPMS system, tire pressure monitoring system, on each tire, each one has a unique code, and it's connecting wirelessly with the ECU. That concerns me. Because that, as far as I know, there's no security happening there. So there's some ID. I think there's a handshake, but I can't imagine it's very strong security. So that's one thing that's definitely concerning to people.
And then,
once you start
go ahead, Bernie.
I'm sorry, Bill. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's fine.
Bill, I want to thank you because not only did you donate a bunch of copies of this hot off the press book, or will be hot off the press later this month. Book, and it's not a cheap book either. This is a fairly pricey book that I encourage people to go out and buy it. But I'm sure it's well worth it. It's a huge fat Bible of great information. It's going to be eye opening to anybody that uses a car or even travels in one. But you donated a bunch of copies of this book to this radio station so that we could raise some money to keep this station on the air. And we've been seeing you with No Starch Press at hacker conferences going back for years, both here and outside the United States, and you're just a great part of the hacker community. And you know, you and 2600 are probably some. I mean, there's some other hacker publishers out there, but I've heard a lot of good things about you. I've seen people crowded around your table at Hope. You really put out some great books, and it's obvious from what you're saying here on the show that you really care that this content that gets out there is important and useful. To folks and
absolutely.
Anyone who's anybody who has a car or travels in a car, which is probably just about anybody, ought to really look into this because even if you're not going to hack the car, it's good to know what you're riding in, like what the vulnerabilities are. I'm sure there's some of this stuff in this book that I wouldn't understand right off the bat, but I get the gist of it. And just
you would,
you know, I learn stuff from reading stuff I don't understand. And then it starts to sink in. So I encourage all of our listeners who ride in cars or drive cars themselves to support this radio station by calling 212-209-2950. And for a pledge of only $55, you'll get a great book that's well worth that, and you'll be supporting this radio station at the same time. So please give us a call, 212-209-2950. Support the kind of publishing that goes on from No Starch Press, support a radio station, WBAI, which is, frankly, how many other radio stations have interviewed you about this topic, Bill?
None.
Exactly. So this is why our listeners like this show, because we give time to people that have interesting things to say about stuff that's going on. You're not going to hear on other radio stations, and that's the beauty of this listener-supported station. So please try to support the station if you're listening now. You must like the show or you wouldn't be listening. 212-209-2950. Get a great book. Learn about the vulnerabilities of the car you're driving or riding in. Support this radio station and support No Starch Press. It's all good causes.
Again, 212-209-2950 is our phone number. Pledge of $55 gets you a copy of the brand new Car Hacker's Handbook. Which you'll learn a ton of material about automobiles, what they're capable of, what the security vulnerabilities are all about. And it's the first step into the future because this kind of thing is going to be around for decades to come.
Absolutely. You can call 212-209-2950 and pledge $55 for the Car Hacker's Handbook. You can also go to our website, give2wbai.org, and pledge for it online. We do have a limited amount of these to give out, so get on that while you can. If you're listening to this in the mysterious future, we may have some left, we may not. So give it a try, 212-209-2950 or give2wbai.org.
Bill, we're going to be moving on the top of the hour. We're on for an extra hour tonight. And I think we'll be talking about the whole Apple controversy maybe after that and maybe taking some listener phone calls. But I wanted to ask you, in the time we have left, if there is anything in this book or anything that you'd like to share about the future prospect of automated driverless cars.
I don't know. I mean, I've actually been in the Google driverless car, which was actually really interesting because it's collecting. What's interesting is that you can watch all the sensors and how it's processing data as it's driving. I think the driverless car basically is like, it embodies a lot of really good defensive driving skills. But I figure, depending on who makes those cars, if it's coming from Google, Google's got an amazing security team, and I imagine that those are going to be pretty well locked down. Because that's coming from a much more modern team than, say, Ford engineers, which isn't to say that there aren't great engineers at Ford. My concern is with anything connected, like your smart TVs, like Nest thermostats and stuff, once we start to add network connectivity to these things, we have potential vulnerabilities. And if we don't have a good system or we don't triage it, then we've got attack surface. So I'm concerned about anything like that. Anything that's connected with a driverless car, I imagine they're going to have vehicle-to-vehicle communication. They're going to want to talk to each other. But they can talk to other cars. They can also talk to potential attackers. Mm-hmm. So I think you just extend, like if you, again, this goes back to kind of learning and understanding the system, then you can extend it to different types of attack.
And Bill, earlier you were so skeptical about the possibility for future books on this topic. I think you're almost starting to spec one out right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to just have the right person to do it. Like, I've missed whole waves of book opportunities because I couldn't find the right person to write it.
Well, Bill, let's assume the right person is listening right now. How would they contact you to write the next book?
They can write to me, bill@nostarch.com. I have only one email address, which is why I'm about 6 months behind.
Uh-huh. that's
or they can write
awesome.
To editors. Yeah, I mean, I'll check. I try to, you know, I don't know, I give up. I just want to press delete all and make it all go away, but I can't.
Well, it seems like, you know, we keep going through the same thing over the years where things are tied into the network. And there's no security because no one thought that security would be needed. And here we're seeing yet another example of this. We've heard rumors about airplanes as well. Are we ever going to learn?
I don't know. I mean, I think we have to change what our priorities are, or at least add this into a priority. But so much stuff is done behind closed doors by people who have been doing it the same way for 30 years, and the world is a different place. And I know from friends who've worked at automotive manufacturers, even forward-looking ones, that security is not a top concern because it hasn't been a top concern among consumers. So if consumers aren't saying, what did you do to protect my car? The automotive engineer is like, I need to cut costs here. Do this. Buy this thing from this manufacturer. Stick this thing in here. I don't care if it works. That's what our customers want.
Well, Bill, isn't it in large part a lot about licensing these days? They kind of bypass really heavy security and, in fact, just sort of block people legally. That was my understanding, especially our friend Tiffany Rad, who's done a lot of work with the Right to Repair. And that whole sort of era of dealerships preventing people from accessing. I think you alluded to the OBD2 system, but I have no indication that CAN bus isn't working the same way as far as dealer access and control without this kind of information, without a book like this. So it's really, really important and excellent timing given all of these interesting things that are computer related. It is absolutely the case in point with Volkswagen here. We've got emissions that are absolutely illegal and sort of insufferable, like really not good for you, whether you're around these kinds of cars or you own one. And for years, it has been that you cannot actually look at the computer and modify it and use the techniques listed in this book. But now, especially in light of this scandal, but since last fall, the interpretation by the Library of Congress has changed. So this is really incredible, a fantastic book. I can't wait to see it. And I really appreciate you speaking with us and sharing so much about this really amazing topic.
Yeah, I love it. It's like the most interesting book I've worked on in years. It's an absolutely fascinating book. I couldn't wait for the chapters to come in. First I love cars, but I love this kind of stuff. And I think it's a very important book for the world. And I mean, I don't mean to, and it's not hyperbole. It's like these cars are all over the world and everyone's sticking computers in them. And I think it's important to all of us who are on the roads, driving a car, walking down the street that auto manufacturers pay attention to this, and I hope that this will be an eye-opener. I believe it was, again, based on that conversation with the guy from MITRE. It's people are paying attention. They're nervous.
Yeah, if you're someone who breathes, too.
Yes.
Yeah, right. And I would encourage you to watch the Dieselgate thing from Chaos Congress. That will give people great insight into how automotive engineers think, how they have to think.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go back.
It's great background for this.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go look for that one. I had absolutely no idea that they covered that at 32C3.
Well, I sure hope the 11th Hope has a talk like that. And if you know someone who's interested in giving a talk like that, or maybe Craig will be interested in doing that, we have a website, hope.net. The speaker section has all kinds of guidelines. Speakers@hope.net is our email address. But that's exactly the kind of thing that we do cover at the Hope conferences. We have covered it before. So I imagine this summer in New York City, we'll be talking about
car hacking village.
Car hacking village. Hey, I like that.
Yep.
I'm not sure how it would work, how we get the car inside, but we'll figure it out. Maybe we'll do it out in the
New York.
Street.
That's a great idea.
You'll figure
like
it out.
That. Well, we'll do it in the street, on 32nd Street or something
this
like that.
It's going to be the hope that someone dies at, isn't it? Bill, how can people see all the other books that we talked about that you guys are publishing?
NoStarch.com. Like, no starch, please, without the word please. When people buy from us, I have done this for years, we'll always give you coupons if you don't have one. Just write to us, we'll give you a coupon. And we also give, when you buy print books from us, we give you all the ebooks free. And I've never used DRM. In fact, I was the first publisher in the country to come out against DMCA. First one. And I stand by that.
Well, I was the first publisher to get charged under the DMCA, so that's got to count for something.
Yeah, you're ahead of me. You win. I meant book publisher. I don't know about magazine.
Uh-huh.
All I know is my business, but the book side.
Definitely kindred spirits, and a lot of what you say resonates in our publishing realm.
Charge me. Go ahead. I'm waiting for the charges. I still don't have any charges.
Oh, I'm sure they're coming. I'm sure someone's filling out forms right now. Bill, thanks so much for what you do on behalf of the entire hack community and people who just are interested in learning. You've done such tremendous work, and I hope you do a lot more such work in the future.
We have some interesting stuff in the hopper, so hopefully
and
you'll
looking
like
forward it. To seeing you at Hope this summer.
Yeah.
And Bill Pollack from No Storage Press. Yeah. Thanks once more.
Yeah, thanks again. Always fun. Always a pleasure.
All right. Good night.
Okay, thanks.
And again, the Car Hacker's Handbook, published by No Storage Press, is our premium for tonight for a pledge of $55. 212-209-2950. You will learn so much about what cars can do and how cars can be manipulated and all sorts of things you probably never had any idea or were possible. You will learn that and so much more, and you'll probably be fascinated from this point on. And of course, if you know somebody that's interested in this kind of thing, let them know or give them this book as a gift. It's incredible. 212-209-2950. Ask for the Car Hacker's Handbook, and a pledge of $55 will get you that.
It's really interesting. I mean, as people listen to this program know, I'm not really into cars at all, but just to know what kinds of things are possible, what's coming, what's going to be possible, what is now possible that we should make impossible, a book like this really shows the way. And, you know, as we've said, if it's from No Starch Press, we know it's a good book, even though it's not out yet, so we haven't read it. 212-209-2950. Call and get your copy or go to give2wbai.org. Just as we said, a limited number of copies available, so act now.
While supplies last.
I wasn't going to put it that way, but
yes,
we can.
But it's true. 212-209-2950. Really fascinating material, and I can't wait to learn more about this myself, because there are things that I'd like to be able to do in cars that I drive. For instance, a little thing like this. I'd like to change the Fahrenheit to Celsius in a digital thermometer. I'd like to change the 12-hour clock to a 24-hour clock. I know it's possible. The dealer says, no, we can't do it. It's not allowed.
But I'll sell you a tool that's $800 that'll help let you do it.
They haven't made that offer yet, but I think they just don't have the imagination.
Oh, no, I'm an aftermarket guy. Yeah, you got to talk to the dealer about that.
Uh-huh. All right, we're at the end of our first hour, but we're on for 2 hours tonight. Yes, lucky listeners. Here at WBAI New York, the Personal Computer Show is not on. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back in just a moment, and we'll be talking about the Apple controversy and maybe taking some phone calls in just a little bit.
You know who else has been pissing me off lately? Google. You guys know Google? A couple of people have heard of it. The rest of you guys are like, Google? What's Google? Google it and find out. Friends, the only way to learn anything anymore is to Google it. And that was fine at first because things were simple. It was like Google was my friend, right? I'd be like, hey, Google, what do you know about this? And Google would be like, well, Ben, here's what I've got for you. Things were simple then. Google was my friend. But somewhere along the line, things changed, and Google turned into that annoying friend who will never let you finish a story because it keeps interrupting you, trying to guess the ending before you can get to it. All right, now I sit down, I type the letter P, and Google is like, Pacific Ocean? Is it Pacific Ocean? Is it? Is it pacifier? Is it pack rat? Is it peanuts? Is it piss bag? What is it? I need to know what it is right now. Tell me what it is right now. I can't wait anymore. I end up learning about stuff that I'm not interested in because Google is so suggestive. I typed in take flight. 3 hours later, I'm an accidental ornithologist. Having inadvertently studied birds for the better part of an afternoon. Now I'm Googling binoculars. Planning a family bird watching trip. I was trying to book a flight to Cleveland. Thanks a lot, Google. What am I supposed to do with all this bird knowledge?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So the words of Ben Bailey on Google here on WBAI, Off the Hook. We're here for another hour, and we'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit. But I just want to reiterate what we did in the last hour. We were talking about car hacking and offering an incredible book that you can pledge for. Pledge of $55, 212-209-2950. Learn all about car hacking, how you can hack your car, how other people can hack your car, what cars are capable of, what silliness has been programmed into them, and lack of security, and all sorts of things like that.
How to make it better or how to make it worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's really, I mean, we've been talking about this for a while. It's something that is going to keep coming up, and I'm sure there are going to be all sorts of scandals and chaos in the future, and people will refer back to this book and to the conversations we've had.
So it's now's the opportunity to get this book and be ahead of those conversations. 212-209-2950. Your pledge of $55 or more, if you want, can get you the Car Hacker's Handbook. And we want to again thank Bill, who we just spoke to for an hour, for donating these books. Your $55 go to the radio station. They go to keep us on the air. They go to keep all the other programs on the station on the air. As Bill said, no other radio station in the country will interview him about this topic. We will, and we can't do it without your support. 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org.
But you know what other radio stations will do, and TV stations and networks and all sorts of things? They will cover stories like this, but they'll get it wrong, and they'll talk about all sorts of fear-mongering aspects to it all. And that leaves people uneducated and ignorant. And that's exactly what you will not be if you read this book. And hopefully, if you listen to this radio show, 212-209-2950, pledge for the car hacking book and learn a ton.
Emmanuel, you know why one of the big reasons that a lot of the other radio stations and news sources will get it wrong when they talk about things like car safety and car vulnerabilities, because they are beholden to, say, a company that sells a car and that advertises the car on their network and that pays them a lot of money and that would not like it if they said bad things about their brand of car. We don't do that here at WBAI, do we?
No, there are no car commercials on WBAI airwaves.
No car commercials, no commercials for anything else, actually, because we don't take money from interests like that in order to advertise their stuff. What we do to stay on the air is we ask you, the listener, for your support. This is the only thing that has kept us on the air for decades, and it's the only thing that can continue to keep us on the air. And keep us free to say what we want about what we want and to do it in the way that we've done for so long. So call 212-209-2950 or go to give2wbai.org and you can pledge $55 for the Car Hacker's Handbook. You can pledge for something else. You can pledge any amount you wish and show your support and help us keep doing what we do.
Yes, we are a strictly community radio formatted entity here in the middle of the FM dial. I would say it's the middle. It's close to the middle.
It's
a little
about
bit
as middle as you can get.
One way or the other. But suffice to say, that's where we are. And this is not just about giving pledges and getting items in return. This is really a concrete contribution to this institution coming at you over the radio or online. There's a lot of changes, a lot of exciting things going on here, but we need your support to keep that active and to
and to maintain a lot of the technical and organizational things that keep this place thriving. You can be a part of that. So please, if you're interested in this, if this book is interesting to you, if maybe you just feel like giving a little bit of support because you enjoy Off the Hook or have for some time, now's the time that you can give a little bit back for whatever you've gotten out of our program and support more of that into the future here at WBAI.
Bernie, any words from you down there in Philadelphia?
Well, this project with the Bill Pollack's been working on it, No Starch Press, has enthused me enough to go out and buy a copy. I can't pledge while I'm on the show, but if not, I'll buy the book directly from No Starch Press. It probably, I don't know. Do we have any idea if all the copies that were donated have been pledged for yet?
I cannot say for sure. I don't have online access to that bit of information yet, but we'll find out.
Yeah, we don't have a tally.
Bernie,
yeah.
if you want to pledge while you're on the air, you can go to give2wbai.org.
That's
and do
right.
It that way.
Yeah, that's one way to do
it.
Although, I don't know if we like distracted radioing, so maybe don't.
I think actually a few of us in this room were so interested by the book that we were a little bit nervous about not getting copies ourselves. So phones were passed around, and I think if it runs out, it might be because of us. So you better hurry up and give a call.
But you can still pledge. Yeah, you can pledge any amount.
I'm intrigued that I can actually get all the codes out of my car for about a $20 ODB2 Bluetooth device. I can look on an Android phone, which my BlackBerry will run Android apps. This is an amazing opportunity for you to imagine. You're spending tens of thousands of dollars for a car, and you're basically buying a bunch of computers in a moving platform, and you have no access to any of the computers. That's ridiculous. It shouldn't be that way. You should be able to control, or at least know what's going on with these computers that you just paid a lot of money for, whether it's a new or used car. So one last effort on this, please call 212-209-2950. Support the radio station for $55. We'll send you a great gift that was given to us by No Starch Press. But this is a very current topic. It's fresh, hot off the press, and you'll definitely be hearing more about it. Okay. We have some more stories to cover today.
Yeah, we sure do. But I just wanted to say, if for some reason you're not interested in this, you can still call and pledge. There are all kinds of other pledge levels, all kinds of other premiums, and you can become a WBAI buddy. Just call 212-209-2950, ask for more information on that. And believe me, every little bit counts. Every little bit keeps this station going. And when we're able to have conversations like this, where we talk about new technology and things that are not being covered in the mass media. All right, so one thing that is being covered quite a bit in the mass media, but I'm not so sure they're getting it right either, is the whole Apple story. Now, I wasn't here last couple of weeks, and I have not been extremely focused on the story, but I think I have a basic idea of what it's all about. But does anybody feel confident enough to kind of give, without injecting your opinion into it, what it is that Apple is facing with this whole give us access to somebody's phone controversy? Mike?
Yeah, so we talked about this last time we were on the air a bit, but Apple produces a very popular line of cell phones, our audience may know, and you can lock the cell phone so you can't turn it on without entering a password. And apparently you can configure these phones so that if you enter the wrong password 10 times, the phone wipes itself and you can't get into it ever again at all because the data is gone. One of these phones was owned by the man in California who shot a bunch of his coworkers, and the phone is owned by his employer, the county government, and the FBI claims they would really like to get into this phone because that they claim there's some investigative need for that. Am I doing a good job of not
so far,
injecting my opinion?
Yeah, so
this
far you're
really
doing
good.
Right. Yeah.
No, and it's a tough case for them. So add my opinion.
So they claim they really want to be in this phone, and what they would like, and they don't want to just guess passwords because if this feature is enabled and they guess the wrong thing 10 times, then they won't, the phone will be wiped and they won't be able to get in anymore. So what they would like Apple to do is not what Apple has already done, because Apple's already done that, which is provide a copy of all the backups of the phone that they have, and just everything that Apple actually has in its possession has already apparently been provided.
Mm-hmm.
But the government would like Apple to go a step beyond. They would like Apple to create a special version of the software that runs on the phone so that the FBI can try as many passwords as it wants. It can, without the phone being wiped. They want to be able to try them as quickly as the hardware will allow. Normally, if you have a device and you guess the wrong password enough times, it will slow down the rate at which you can guess so that you can't just guess all the passwords. But the FBI would like to be able to guess all the passwords, and they would like Apple to write this software for them. They would like to Apple to install it on this device for them. And the other thing the FBI wants is they don't even want to type in all the passwords. They want to be able to enter the passwords in remotely from a computer or something.
Okay, that's a pretty good summation, I think. Now, if I understand correctly, if you were to hand me your iPhone right now,
I don't